This is Word on the Street, important happenings and events in and around our community.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Word on the Street. I'm your host, Gianna Wilcox, and this show is all about our community and how we at Cumulus Media can help. Today, I'm with Kelly Glenn, the Chief Development Officer, and Elizabeth Banks, the Chief Operating Officer for Hope Atlanta. How y'all doing this morning?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Elizabeth?
Doing well as well.
Great. Thank you guys so much for joining me.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I can't wait to learn more. So let's just go ahead and jump right into it. Can either of you guys give me some background and history about Hope Atlanta?
Sure. So Hope Atlanta is actually celebrating its 125th year of service and impact in our city. We're very, very proud to be around since 1900. And we were started by five women noticing what was going on around a rebuilding community in Atlanta after the Civil War. And they noticed that there were lots of people who didn't have homes, that were separated from families, and they wanted to do something about it. So they formed an Atlanta Women's Ministry Association, which evolved into Travelers Aid of Metropolitan Atlanta. And then we further evolved into Hope Atlanta. We've always stayed true to our mission in serving our community. Through the decades, we've been able to evolve with our community's needs in Atlanta. So we have been through two world wars. We've been through the civil rights movement. We've been through the AIDS epidemic. We were able to assist folks who were stranded due to 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, and also with COVID-19. And now we're facing a new crisis in our community that revolves around behavioral health. And throughout those decades, we've been able to evolve and make sure that we're meeting the needs of our community as it relates to our veterans programming that's still in existence, working with trains, the MARTA airport, providing services and outreach for them. And now we're developing a new behavioral health program where we can help our unhoused neighbors and ensure that they have what they need when our community really has a lack of resources available.
Fantastic. I think it's great that you guys have been able to stay strong for so many years. I mean, first of all, congratulations, 125 years. That's almost unheard of, I feel like, now. So congratulations on being around for so long. But I'm glad you guys have been able to evolve with the community's needs. Like you said, through all the wars, through the AIDS crisis, and even through COVID-19, I think it's great that no matter what the community is needed, you guys have been helpful along the way.
In addition to what we're doing now with our behavioral health services, as many people know in Metro Atlanta, there is also an affordable housing crisis, and many of our clients are facing housing insecurity. And that includes not just those who are chronically homeless, who you actually might see, you know, sleeping on the street and things like that, but also the invisible homeless and the housing insecure folks that are couch surfing or sleeping in their car or sleeping at relatives' house and they don't know how long they're going to be able to stay. And so one of the things we've really been focusing on in this era of Hope Atlanta is what we can do to not only address those who chronically need us, the real most vulnerable folks, but also trying to prevent people from becoming homeless so that we can really have a comprehensive strategy. And that's also how our behavioral health program rolls into that, being able to actually address root causes that cause homelessness, such as substance use and mental health, but also trauma, mental health that results from being homeless and having housing insecurity. And so that's really our new focus of our new era.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that because affordable housing is definitely a tough subject and hard for a lot of people. I don't consider myself, you know, unhoused. I'm lucky enough that my parents allowed me to move back in after college. But still, like, I'm looking at the market and it's kind of like, when am I ever going to have enough money to get my own place? So I really do appreciate that you guys are looking at that aspect of the housing crisis.
Yep, we know it's a critical need out there. We've had students from universities in Atlanta, people who are working for corporations and people who are working, you know, at McDonald's and service industries and things like that. So we've seen the whole gambit. Homelessness doesn't have one size. Housing insecurity doesn't have one size, doesn't have one shape, color. It's kind of across the spectrum. And while it does occur in certain populations more frequently due to the social determinants of health and inequities that exist, systemic inequities, it can happen to anyone. And it is only one or two crises away from happening to anyone.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I say this about a lot of things, but especially about someone's housing situation. At any moment, you can be struck with misfortune and end up on the street or end up couch surfing or end up in a predicament where you never thought you would be. So I think it's important for everyone to realize that it can happen to anyone, no matter what you do, no matter who you are. Just don't think that you're out of its reach.
Yeah. Many people we engage with also in terms of our board or our staff, they may have a family member or they may know someone in their community that has struggled with it, or they themselves may have struggled and resulted in homelessness or housing insecurity, no matter how long that looks. And so I think that's one of the hardest things for people to wrap their head around sometimes, is that it's not just the stigmatized group that you see living in tents. And I think that it is way closer to home than people probably realize. There may be people where you work experiencing it, where you live, play, when you're going through the airport. I mean, your daily life is impacted by it. You may not notice it, but if you really start to kind of observe and ask questions and really try to understand people and have deep empathy, it touches all of us and is really something that can be solved if we're doing it in a coordinated, collaborative way.
Yes, absolutely. I love the way that you phrase that.
I was just thinking, you know, as you were talking about living at home with your parents and having the fortune of them allowing you to live with them. And I was just thinking about what so many people face. I mean, we're seeing a lot of people who are on fixed incomes, like our senior citizens who have been living in communities for decades, and they're starting to get priced out of their housing. And inflation due to rising costs in food and rising costs in medicine and medical needs that they have forced them to leave these communities and face homelessness, which they never thought would be possible at their age. And it's really heartbreaking near our offices off Ponce de Leon. And you're seeing so many senior citizens that are experiencing homelessness, and they come into our Women's and Community Kitchen. I'm so glad that Hope Atlanta is able to meet them where they are. And we have people on our staff who help them find affordable housing. It may not be in the communities that they frequent, where they have, you know, an established doctor and familiar neighbors, but we help them get into new communities with resources that are around them. As Elizabeth was saying earlier, we're really honing into a place-based model where we're finding places for folks to be able to access things that have been barriers for them, which is access to healthcare, affordable food, behavioral health support, case management. But it's just, we touch so many different people. And so many different people are facing homelessness that never thought they would. And it's families, it's our senior citizens, it's veterans, it's individuals who are, you know, like you, who may be earlier in their career and would like to purchase a home or have their own apartment. But so many people are being priced out right now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I feel like that's the one thing people don't think about when it comes to the unhoused and homelessness. When it comes to the elderly, and you're right, they're in these communities for practically their entire lives. They've raised their families there, they've raised their grandkids there, maybe all that. But with inflation and everything being more expensive, eventually, sometimes people will get pushed out of these communities that they were built around, and they have to face things they never thought they would face.
And I think one thing about that as well is inflation for your basic needs. So your food, your medicine, those kinds of things. But also when you're looking at property taxes going up as certain neighborhoods get gentrified and things like that. And so really thinking about what communities are being most impacted by this. And then also realizing that each one of those people has their own story. And so we were actually hosting an event at one of the apartments that we have that's focused on seniors. And a lot of those seniors are raising their grandchildren. And so we're not talking about just single folks. We're talking about generations of people being affected by this or at risk of being affected by this. And so I'm really trying to examine what we can do through bringing all of these resources to these place-based sites, to these units, to complexes and permanent supportive housing projects, such as the Melody Downtown, providing those types of wraparound services, the Bonaventure site that just opened up in Virginia Highlands. So really trying to make sure that we're bringing holistic care, and not just with us, but also sharing with our partners in this work, because we can't do everything. We can't be everything to all people, but making sure that people have access to workforce development. So once we've gotten them stabilized with rental assistance and behavioral health care and support services, then what can we do to get them to self-sufficiency long term? And so that's one of the really key things about the work that we're doing, is trying to make sure we have strong partnerships, because Hope Atlanta can't solve homelessness on their own. We require a continuum of care of providers and support providers to do this work as well.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It takes a village, even when it comes to organizations like you guys who have been around for so long. It still takes, like you said, these partners to where they can address things that maybe you guys can't address. Like, you guys are doing everything you can do, but maybe there's this one thing that you can't. Oh, well, our partner so-and-so, they specialize in that. So we'll direct you to them, or we'll bring them to you, and we'll fix everything.
Exactly.
So, Kelly, you mentioned earlier about how you guys have evolved through all these major events. How was it getting through COVID, not just from a business standpoint, but also with the people that you serve?
That's a good question.
So one of the things about COVID that was actually beneficial for the system was that there was an influx of dollars that actually gave us the ability to expand support for people that maybe typically wouldn't be eligible for it. And what I mean by that is a lot of governmental dollars are really focused on that chronic homelessness piece. So those people that have a longer history of homelessness, so at least a year of homelessness or four consecutive bouts, they have to meet that criteria. And then typically they also have some sort of chronic or disabling condition, and that determines kind of their vulnerability index, and the most vulnerable get served first. And so sometimes, as we know, the longer that you are experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity, the more susceptible you are to the negative implications of that, right? More trauma, more time out on the street, lack of safety, security, et cetera, more risk of behavioral health conditions, et cetera. So as that's happening, that can be an issue. And so our current system is really focused on that. With COVID, there was an influx of more eviction prevention dollars. There was preventative measures because they had like the eviction moratorium. And although that wasn't like necessarily a solve all, because there was an influx of that prevention focused money and trying to divert people from coming into longer term homelessness, that money really helped support preventing and kind of decreasing by the upstream part of the work, right? So trying to decrease the rushing water that is flooding downhill, which is homelessness. And so that's one thing about COVID, that although it was more difficult for shelters, right? You got it right. You could serve, couldn't have people in proximity. There was additional dollars coming into the system that are no longer coming into the system and also are at risk of being cut even further. And so with that in mind, that was one of the silver linings of COVID, is that there was an influx of additional support, because I think the community and the country as a whole really rallied and knew that this was a crisis that needed to be addressed. And the most vulnerable people were the ones that couldn't shelter in place because they had no shelter. And so I think really looking at it from that lens, that was one of the highlights of COVID, even though it was a terrible time.
I would also add to that, thinking about the isolation that we all endured during COVID-19 and the awareness around mental health. I think since COVID, people really were able to wrap their heads around how that has impacted their own families. But if you think about COVID-19 and the isolation that people endured and that leading to mental health, our population has been experiencing isolation for decades. And speaking to the trauma that they endure on the streets, the isolation, they're amongst a city full of people, yet they're overlooked and ignored. And that exasperates someone's mental health. And so it's really critical, and this is something that we have started and we are walking into, is making sure that we're able to serve our clients who have mental health, behavioral health issues through a lens of homelessness. And that's really what Elizabeth and her team are specializing in, is that this has really impacted our community, our in-house community, for decades and has gone unmet. And we're really stepping into this space where people are realizing that this is something that's really critical and important. There's also a lack of access for folks that can afford a therapist or a psychiatrist, but it really makes folks that we serve unable to get the services that they need. So that's something that we're really stepping into and leaning into to make sure that we can create that space for them, because our ultimate goal is to get somebody from their crisis, stabilize them, and make sure that they can get to self-sufficiency. And while that looks like, yes, a home, yes, food, it also speaks to the need for them to have case management and develop individualized plans for them based on their needs, and making sure that they have the behavioral health support that they need to address any issues that either led to their homelessness or that they had because of their homelessness.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think you're right. The isolation that we were all feeling during COVID was just emphasized for the unhoused community, because they're already by themselves most of the time on the street. But then everyone else who was just going about their daily lives that they might see are now in the house. They're not even seeing them anymore. So, like you said, it really does emphasize anything that they were dealing with before, because now they don't get any kind of human interaction because everyone's in the house. And I know I was lucky enough that I was in the house with my family. So although we were isolated in the house, I still had people to talk to, people to interact with. I can't even imagine literally being by yourself during that time. I can't even imagine that.
The other thing I'll add to about COVID as well and its impact on homelessness is people with pre-existing conditions were also more susceptible to getting COVID. And so many of the people that we serve have pre-existing conditions such as diabetes and heart disease, and those things actually made you more susceptible to not just COVID, but the most severe aspects of COVID, and also the least access to care and having someone to be able to support you and the things you need to recover. And so also noting that piece of how COVID really impacted who we're serving is also very important.
Yes, you're exactly right.
Welcome back to Word on the Street.
If you're just now tuning in, you're listening to Word on the Street. I'm Gianna with Kelly Glenn, the Chief Development Officer, and Elizabeth Banks, the Chief Operating Officer for Hope Atlanta. So, just continuing on here, you guys have both kind of briefly mentioned some of your services, but could you give me some specifics about the services you offer?
Sure. So one of the things that we are proudest of is the fact that we meet people where they are. We have one of the largest street outreach teams in Metro Atlanta, and that's really us going out to encampments. We work at the airport, we work with MARTA. We have an amazing partnership with one of our corporate partners, QT. And so those programs really go out to meet those folks that are, unsheltered, living in places that aren't meant for a habitation, and trying to bring them services, building rapport, making sure that they're aware of the services that are available to them, trying to get them into shelter or emergency lodging, depending on their needs, and then getting them connected with case management so that they can build a plan for themselves for what the future looks like. And that also rolls into what our other programming is. So we provide rapid rehousing or rental assistance programming, move-in assistance, utility assistance. So really providing that financial benefit, as well as eviction prevention and diversion services to prevent people from coming into the system. We also have specialty programs that are focused on folks who are veterans, as well as people who have an HIV diagnosis. And then As we've kind of mentioned, behavioral health support is our new addition to that to really provide that wraparound care as well as holistic case management. So making sure that we're able to build those plans, that the plan is tailored for the person based off of their skills, based off of their needs and strengths to get them ultimately to be stabilized and then to self-sufficiency. So those are our primary programs.
When I came to Hope Atlanta 2 years ago, I was blown away by the amount of people that we are able to serve each year. And so every year we're serving nearly 6,300 people. 48% of those are families.
Oh my goodness. That's when you put numbers like that to it, it sounds crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And also not just families, but families with children under 18. So we're really focused on like caregivers. And then the other thing that I'll add is 58% of the people that we're serving have a behavioral health condition. So some sort of mental health or substance use issue. And so while that doesn't represent everyone that is experiencing housing insecurity, it is an increasing issue. And that number has actually risen just in the 3 years that I've worked at Hope Atlanta. I think it was 38% 3 years ago, and now we have 48%. And so I think that that really does result from some of the systemic issues, the COVID-19 epidemic, the inflation, all that stuff that causes stress has just exacerbated the population that we're seeing.
Yeah, definitely. I think just hearing that rise in the amount of people just speaks to how much an organization like you guys is necessary to, one, just spread the word about what is going on, but also help these people and help with this crisis that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So you guys mentioned that you also work with veterans. Can you tell me about your veterans programs?
Sure. Our veterans program is primarily focused on rental assistance or rapid rehousing and eviction prevention for up to 9 months of service. So it's a temporary subsidy to help veterans who have recently become homeless get back on their feet. That service also comes with comprehensive wraparound services. So we have dollars to support peer support specialists. So people who are veterans, who have lived experience of homelessness, being able to give back and really coach other veterans through what this process is like and being that support system for them. We also have a partnership with Atlanta Legal Aid for legal services to help people with discharge statuses or if they have, you know, things on their background that can prevent them and become a barrier from housing. We also have healthcare navigation, so making sure that our veterans are getting connected to their health benefits, insurance, things like that, and making sure that they're taking care of themselves holistically, as well as paying for and supporting them to have the items they need in their house. So one of the things that people don't know realize is, yes, it's you get moved into your house, but you need furniture and you need groceries and you need cleaning supplies. And then our teams are also working with each of those veterans to build skills to make sure that they know how to clean their oven, they know how to take care of their house, they know how to be a good neighbor, especially those who have not lived in an apartment for 15 to 30 years. They kind of lose that skill or were never taught it to begin with. And so that's another thing that is a part of that program.
Nice. I think that's really interesting. All the things you mentioned are things that you don't really think about when it comes to working with the unhoused community. It's always like, yes, let's find them a home. Yes, let's find them a home. Like, okay, we found them somewhere to live, but now we need to actually make it a home with the furniture, with the groceries, with cleaning supplies, and then teaching them how to be a neighbor. I think it's so interesting because I feel like everyone needs to learn how to be a neighbor sometime. So giving them those skills, not just to have a home, but also giving them the skills to be a productive member of society is fantastic.
Yes, exactly.
So something that really caught my eye when I was doing my research is your Heroes for Hope Gala. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so our Heroes for Hope Gala, that's our signature fundraising event. It's a time where we get to celebrate and honor our community who really wrap themselves around our mission and make sure that we have the funds that we need to operate all year long. So every year we identify a hero through an individual hero, a corporate hero, and a volunteer hero. This year is very special because it is our 125th anniversary celebration, and we're really excited to bring together folks who have poured into us right now, but also in our past. So we're going to be also recognizing folks like who have been involved with us, like John Lewis and Reverend Hosea Williams, and all these amazing historic people who have been involved with us throughout the decades. This year in particular, we're really excited to honor Norfolk Southern, whose mission is really to give back and to make sure that folks who are experiencing homelessness have a place to go and resources. We're also celebrating and honoring our individual hero for hope, Catherine Vassell at Partners for Home. And we're also celebrating our anniversary legacy award from Home Depot. So, speaking of veterans, Home Depot has really poured into our veterans program, and we're excited to have the Senior Vice President of Culture Officer, Crystal Hanlon, receive that award. But this year's going to be super special. We have been diving into our 125 years of history, and we just found some really incredible historic documentation that we have from 1900 from our founders who hand wrote in scripts their meeting minutes and the names of people that they served and some of the stories of the people that they served and how much it costs, like $1.60 to help somebody get a hotel to go home. But what was really neat as we were diving into our history is that we still serve the same people that we served in 1900. It's people who don't have homes. It's families who, for whatever reason, started experiencing homelessness, and they were able to come to this organization to get on their feet and to prevent them from a cycle of homelessness. And so it is really exciting that we'll be able to share those stories with our guests on October 9th at Flourish, where many of our corporate communities will be coming together and individuals celebrating this really rich history that we have. Another really exciting thing that we're found and learned is that hope has just always been progressive. Through every single decade, we met the need, but we also showed others how to do it. And one person, Dorothy Baker, that we were just really excited to learn about, was a woman of color who was hired in 1940, well ahead of the civil rights movement. And she worked in and was promoted to be over our programs and did a phenomenal job delivering our programs. So even in the 1940s, Hope Atlanta was doing the right thing and serving the people who were most in need in our communities.
I love that. This sounds like an amazing event, not just, with all the people you're honoring and then also just celebrating 125 years. I love that it kind of gave you guys an excuse to deep dive into your history and to learn all these things about what you guys have done over the years and just being a progressive organization basically from the beginning is amazing and that you're kind of continuing that now, which I feel is something we need now more than ever, unfortunately, but I loved you guys are doing this work and continuing to do this work. And I am so excited for people to celebrate you guys at this event.
Thank you. I am extremely proud to be at Hope Atlanta and get to work at Hope Atlanta. And I really want our Atlanta community to also be proud of the work that they have helped support for 125 years. I want them to be proud that there's somewhere like Hope Atlanta that they've supported, that has been around, and that continues to do really important work. I mentioned that we serve 6,300 people a year. And those are numbers, but they're also 6,300 individual people who have different stories, who have different experiences. And because the community wraps itself around Hope Atlanta, we're able to make a difference together. It's not us alone, but it's us partnering with people who make donations, who give sponsorships, who give us grants, and we're able to take that money, pour into the people who need us and either prevent homelessness in their lives or take folks who have literally lived on the street for decades and have felt unseen and ignored. And we get to house them and watch them come to a place where they're bettering their education, they're bettering their employability. And that's all because of people investing in the work that we do.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, it takes a village, it takes a community, and I'm gonna speak for Atlanta here. We are definitely proud to have you guys here because I just feel like a lot of people would not be where they are without you guys.
Well, thank you. That means so much.
Of course. So you guys have mentioned your partners throughout the interview. So what is the Hope Atlanta Bridge Builders?
Yeah, our bridge builders are our corporate partners. And one thing we need funds, right? So that is something that we need to be able to make sure that we are able to stay open and we're able to meet folks where they're at. But we really believe in a full partnership of time, talent, and treasure. So that time piece really looks like you coming to our women's community kitchen and signing up for either Tuesday, Wednesdays, or Thursdays to serve our women and children who need food and who need case management support. We have other areas around the city where folks can deploy and host parties or meet needs of those who are in our communities, who are housed, but also need support and sustain community in their lives. So our bridge builders are people and corporations who provide the full circle of a meaningful partnership for us, which is their time, their volunteering, their talent. That could be skills that you have that you can share with our clients, whether that be job training skills, financial literacy, coupon abilities, like you name it, whatever, coming and bringing those talents, serving on our Young Professionals Board or our Board of Directors, helping us like you are right now and giving us voice to our Atlanta community. And then the treasure piece is obviously we need investments so that we can take that investment and yield a return, which is somebody's life and bettering their life.
Yeah, that's great. There sounds like there's so many ways for people to get involved. Like you said, time, talent, or treasures, and no little bit is too small. Every bit
That's right.
counts.
That's right.
So we talked about the Heroes for Hope event, but do you guys have any other events coming up?
Our upcoming events, we do have one signature event in October, which is our Heroes for Hope event, but we do have events throughout. So during the summer, we really concentrate on Pack the Pantry. And we would love to invite folks, whether you are in an office in a de or in a department or in a neighborhood or community, or maybe it's a church, to invite folks to do a drive and help us replenish our pantry by donating imperishable food items, canned goods. We also need hygiene kits. So we take hygiene kits, and our outreach team goes out and they start building relationships with folks who are experiencing homelessness by distributing hygiene kits. So you can host parties where you are, invite people in, and ask them to bring something that we need for hygiene kits, move-in kits. Elizabeth mentioned earlier on when people move into their homes, they need sheets and they need dishes and shower curtains and trash cans and cleaning supplies. All this stuff is a great expense, and we can't do that without folks who are able to rally around and do parties throughout the summer and the fall and providing these items for us. We also need gift cards. That's a huge need for us for Christmas and to help us purchase food and items for our clients. So while we don't have necessarily a lot of fundraising events, because we do really just have one in October, and then we have one that our Young Professional Board hosts in the spring, but there's always a party, there's always an event that you can throw as a community to ensure that we're getting our needs met through providing some in-kind needs. And all of that stuff can be found on our website if you're looking for lists, going to our Amazon account, so forth, and getting the items that our clients need and that we most use, and allowing us to bring those to them.
Great. Not really an event, kind of an ongoing event, which is just another way for you people to get involved with you guys and help the people that you serve.
That's right.
So, just one last thing before we kind of wrap this up, and either or both of you guys can answer this, but what is the main thing you would like listeners to take away from this discussion, whether that be about you guys or homelessness as a whole?
I'll take this one and then Kelly can add. But I think the one thing that I want people to take away is that homelessness is a solvable problem if we work together, and that each person who is experiencing homelessness has their own story. No story looks the same. And I invite everyone to, instead of kind of being desensitized to just driving by and acting like that person isn't there because that's how what we do to cope, to really look at that person as a human, as a neighbor, as someone who's a part of your community, and believe that they deserve a safe, stable place to call home. And even one thing, like Kelly mentioned, of making a $10 donation a month, or putting together a cleaning kit, or coming to our Heroes for Hope Gala and buying a ticket. Even one of those things can help, but even more so, one small conversation with that person on the street is equally as impactful and a place to start. So, just one act of compassion, one act of empathy can really change lives and is a starting point to get them to Hope Atlanta or to the next step in their journey. And so, that's what I would want everyone to take away from this.
I could go on and on, and Elizabeth did such a phenomenal job. I would add to that that, people think that they know what people are going through. They think that they know why someone is experiencing homelessness or facing homelessness. And to reiterate what Elizabeth said, lean in with compassion, lean in with understanding, because you may find out that it's not what you think it is at all. I hear a lot of people say, why don't they just get a job? They're able to go work, or they're on drugs, or they made some poor choices. And that's not necessarily the case. There are a lot of people who are working who are experiencing homelessness. There's a lot of people who are not on drugs, believe it or not, and are experiencing homelessness. And they're really just trying the best that they can during a time where things are so unaffordable, and they're just trying to take the next best step. I would also say, a lot of people ask me, how can they help? They see homelessness in their communities. What can they do to help? Should they buy food for this person? Should they, purchase shoes for this person? And I love that place of compassion. And yes, I think providing for folks who are experiencing homelessness and leaning in with empathy and trying to provide their needs is great. But I also want to encourage people to volunteer at an organization that makes a difference. Agencies like ours really help people who are on the street achieve self-sufficiency. And that is our goal for every single person that we come across, is to get them off of the streets and making sure that they can have a life that they're proud of, a life where they can have hope for their future. And we really want to encourage people to just refer folks to agencies like Hope Atlanta so that they can have an agency and a community of people to surround them. And one small thing can make a difference. People are like, well, I don't have a lot of money, I don't have a lot of time. Our monthly donors make a huge impact. If you just give $10 a month, that's $120 at the end of a year. And if many people did that, we are able to make a huge difference with our monthly donor program. So I want to encourage folks, just go to our website at hopeatlanta.org. Go and see how you can make a difference. Is it volunteering? Is it donating? Is it taking down our information and sharing it with somebody? And that's what I would really encourage people to know and do as well.
Yeah, you guys are both exactly right. I think going into this just with empathy and compassion for everyone's circumstances and not assuming you know what they're going through. Even like Elizabeth said, just going and talking to someone, having a conversation, opening up the dialogue, learning about that person, giving them that human interaction can go such a long way. And then also, like you said, Kelly, just donating $10 a month, like in the grand scheme of things, it may seem like so little, but like you said, in a year, that's $1,200. So just going out and doing the little things that end up adding up to one big thing, I think is very important. I think we could all do a little bit here and there to make a big difference.
That's right.
Well, Kelly and Elizabeth, thank you guys so much for being part of Word on the Street. You just shared the website, but could you share how they can find you guys on social media?
Yeah, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Hope Atlanta.
Fantastic. Y'all make sure to go check out their website. Like she says, there's so many ways to get involved. All the information is there. You can learn about their history, all 125 years. It's all there. Their services, like I said, how you can get involved, the Heroes for Hope Gala, volunteering opportunities. It's amazing. And then also make sure to go check them out on their social media. Get to see what they're getting into day to day, maybe some behind the scenes, any updates they might have. It's all there and it's great. Again, thank you guys so much for being part of We're on the Street. I'm Gianna Wilcox, and thank you for listening.